Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Wednesday, February 17th. And John, I have a question for you.
Oh, no.
Little game of would you rather. Would you rather be forced, Clockwork Orange style, to watch the remainder of this Michigan State basketball season or get hit by a bus?
Oh, my God. Okay. Can I answer that with a story?
Absolutely.
Okay. There was a colleague of mine. I work in Chicago, and she actually got hit by a bus.
But whoops.
And she was crossing the street. There are cameras everywhere, so it showed that the bus was in the wrong. And they like went through a yellow and like hit her in the crosswalk and like shattered her collarbone, broken like rib cage, whatever, just a mess. And she has to go to the hospital, obviously. And then from the hospital the next day, emails the entire company, all everyone, and is like, because she couldn't communicate with anyone, was like, where is she? You know, and no one knew. She's like, I am out of the office. I got hit by a bus. I'd appreciate if no one ever made the joke again about being so hungover they felt like they've been hit by a bus, because it's nothing like that. It is much worse. So with that, I'm gonna go with watch these games, but I'd like the opportunity to change my mind soon. Yeah.
I'll give you like a 3-game opt-out clause. You could change your mind after 3 games, but if not, you're watching them all. Good God. That's really all I have to say. Let's just dive right in, and then we'll talk about the long-term ramifications, all of that good stuff, because there's plenty to get to.
Okay.
So since we last spoke to you, Michigan State, this is going to shock you, has lost 2 more basketball games. The winning streak did not continue.
Dude.
And
2 games is a streak. It's true.
It was technically a streak, and not only did it not continue, it came to just a screeching halt. Like, playing against Iowa, which was probably happening while you were listening to this podcast last week, or maybe it was day, I don't know. I don't know days anymore. No, that was this weekend. I don't know. Whatever. Michigan State got the doors blown off of them by Iowa. This is what happens when Iowa hits shots. They just beat the crap out of bad teams, which is, make no mistake, what Michigan State is.
Can I talk about that for a second?
Please do.
What happened to the game plan last year, and where it was like, you don't double Garza? It's a math equation. I understand we had Xavier Tillman, but Garza's still going to get, like, and Tillman made it much easier. Don't get me wrong. But you don't double him. You let him eat. And he's going to make 50 to 60% of his shots, but that is better than doubling and allowing Iowa to hit what, like 15 threes or
600,
something?
700, like, I don't know, somewhere around there.
And that's not a new game plan. Like, the Big Ten has been running that play, and it's the reason why Iowa can't ever win a Big Ten championship, because they don't know how to adjust. Like, and it, like, that is the most mind-boggling thing to me, is like, MSU played Iowa already once and lost by 6. Played and didn't double Garza every time. They didn't do it. And right. Then they were like, you know what we should do? Let's try something else that we know won't work. And lose by 30.
You know what? It reminds me of Arrested Development.
Yeah.
When Tobias Fünke is sitting there and he's speaking to his wife, and he says something about, well, we could try a trial separation. And then is what Lindsay's like, does that work for people? He goes, no, of course not. That never works. But it might work for us. That seems to me like the exact conversation all of these coaches were having with each other before this game. Like, hey, we know this isn't good, but
incredible.
What if it does work? It just, I don't know. And that's the stuff. And let's talk about Purdue too. What do you know? A rock fight at Mackey, a place Michigan State has not won, John, as you pointed out to me before we got on here, since 2014, a long time ago, against some not great Purdue teams in that span. MSU once again, just with no answers, total no show from Rocket, who was sick. I'll give okay.
Then don't that. Play.
Then don't play. Right. A complete, an almost literal no show from Marcus Bingham, who I don't believe registered a stat aside from fouls.
I want to get on the board. He was so close to a 3 trillion. And if you're unfamiliar with trillions, Mark Titus, legendary walk-on at Ohio State, once quoted as saying before the national championship game to head coach Thad Matta, walking up to him right before tip-off and saying, coach, I got 5 fouls and I can't take them home with me. And I can't imagine hearing that from a walk-on right before tip-off of the national championship.
He, like, talk about an icebreaker.
Get the F out of here. But anyway, he came up with the term trillions because if you play minutes and don't register any stats, then that is a trillion. He went for a 3 trillion, 3 minutes, but he did get a block. And he also registered 3 fouls in those 3 minutes, which is incredible stuff. Regardless, sure, he didn't show up. Let's see, who else didn't show up? Boy, there was some guys who didn't show up and who did show up and then weren't allowed to play in the second half. Mattis Isoko played his best half of his best basketball we've ever seen him play. He was rewarded with not playing in the second half. Julius Marble played the best basketball he's played this year outside of the Duke game. He played for less than, I think he played for 8 minutes in the second half. The rest was given to Thomas Kithier, I believe, in the second half. And listen, there's a lot of hatred towards specific players. Redirect that hatred, folks. Redirect that anger. They're not choose. They don't put themselves in. Okay. There are people that are paid a lot of money. These players are paid $0, allegedly. Yes. And there are coaches that are deciding, you know what? Let's put a 6'8 kid against a 7'4 kid and just see what happens. And this may shock you. Didn't work. So, redirect that anger is where I would say.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's no point in diving into the minutiae of these games aside from what that you just said. Michigan State stinks. They're allocating their minutes poorly. They can't shoot. All hope apparently seems to be lost. Now, like you said, the hate's got to go somewhere. You can't just keep it all pent up inside.
It needs
to be directed at this coaching staff. And I said something on Twitter and got some interesting responses where I said, if this wasn't Tom Izzo, people would be begging for heads to roll from this team. And I think it speaks to a couple things. I think, first of all, it speaks to the expectations that people should have of this program. We've talked about it before. Expectations are a dangerous thing, but when you make the tournament 22 years in a row, win the Big Ten 3 years in a row, Final Fours, et cetera, All-Americans, you've earned those expectations.
Created by this coaching staff.
And because of that, this coaching staff should be held to a higher standard than people are holding them to right now. And it comes in two different avenues, right? There's recruiting and then there's development. Now, I think everybody is, you know, this, the popular thing that's emerged is, I think, is the 2018 class, that 5-man class is now being looked at as just whiff after whiff after whiff. I mean, I believe that class was comprised of Marcus Bingham, Foster Lawyer, Kithier, Henry, and and Gabe Brown. Right. Now, when you look at all of them separately, aside from Aaron Henry, okay, let's look at it this way. From a recruiting perspective, I think it's fair to take some issue. I think it's fair to take issue with the Lawyer and Kithier recruitments. I think the personal connection to Dane Fife's dad is something that obviously played somewhat of a role in, especially in the Kithier aspect of this whole thing, because they offered him as a sophomore. And I'm sorry, I don't know if he was, he didn't even play his senior year. So that one never really, that one didn't make sense to me at the time. The Foster one, I will take a half step back and somewhat excuse, if only because the kid was a assassin in high school. He was incredibly good. He beat out very good players for the Michigan, the state of Michigan player of the year. Dude averaged like 30 plus points. Like,
well, and
it's Austin. Okay.
And Austin, not just high school, because, you know, there is a good
AAU.
Yeah, exactly. There is a good argument that Class A Michigan high school basketball has taken a step back because of school of choice, and that is probably true. It's just diluted the talent pool. AAU, he played in the Nike EYBL. They won their league. He was the best player on that team. They played some guys. So that miss was – AAU is a different game. I get that, but I'm not excusing it. Because you still need to be able to say, like, how does this work with my system and his physical limitations? They thought it might. That's okay. But so that's a miss. But to your point, there were many misses.
Well, the thing is, I also, again, if we're looking at this class, let's say you landed this five-man class this year. You can ask your questions about Kithier, make, you know, ask your questions about Lawyer, again, both totally understandable. The other three, I don't think anybody would take issue with. If anybody's going to take issue with any of them sitting here today, it would have been recruiting Aaron Henry, and that has turned out to be easily the best player in this class. But like, I don't take issue at all with recruiting Marcus Bingham or Gabe Brown, because when you recruit them as a freshman, you think, okay, by the time they're juniors, we're going to have worked with them enough that their games are going to expand. The issue is that in those 3 years, neither of those guys have added a single thing to their game. And that, to me, is the reason why none of this is working. Because in a five-man class, to be honest with you, if you hit on three and whiff on two, that's okay. I think most schools would be thrilled with those results. Obviously, standards a little higher at Michigan State, but I think the really disappointing part, again, is just that these dudes have simply not taken the steps that they've needed to take. And it's not because of a lack of opportunity. I mean, Gabe Brown's been playing consistent minutes since he was a freshman. Marcus Bingham should have redshirted, and I do think that alters the conversation, because if he's a redshirt sophomore this year, I might feel, you know, you might feel a little bit differently about him, but he chose not to do that. And then played a ton of minutes last year, has gotten plenty of opportunity this year. And I mean, you can't point to one area of his game that they've taken steps forward. And it's not, I mean, that class is kind of under the microscope right now for a good reason. But again, and we've harped on this so much, but like Rocket Watts has taken no step from year one to year two. Honestly, as useful as I think Malik Hall is, I've seen no evolution in his game whatsoever. Julius Marble, I think, is, again, we've talked about him before too, but there's nothing growing internally on this team. And I think what it's showing is that everyone was so reliant on Cassius Winston and Xavier Tillman to just be the pillars that held everything up. And it's really coming back to kill them in ways that I think everybody expected this team to take a step back, but to 10-9, to getting not just losing games, but getting embarrassed at home, on wherever, is, to me, it's unacceptable. And again, I think if this team isn't Tom Izzo and a bunch of experienced assistant coaches, you'd have very real conversations, and you may still, about changes that need to be made, because this is it. Frankly, I don't care how many championships you won before this year. It's all about what have you done for me lately? And if you haven't done anything for me lately, you know, I'm sorry. And now it appears to be affecting the future too. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, a handful of things. So first, I want to say, I want to get on the, I want to break your heart a bit more. I know you're upset, so I'm going to make you furious.
Right.
Last night you watched Trevion Williams put 28 on every big's head for Michigan State. Trevion Williams, Austin's favorite recruit, non-MSU recruit since, geez.
It's been a while, man. Big time crush of mine.
Trevion Williams from Detroit, Henry Ford Academy, had a Michigan State offer. And here's where it gets really tricky. And I don't know the exact ins and outs of this, but I'm not going to take a few leaps here to make you pretty upset for the sole purpose of making you upset.
Fantastic.
Trevion Williams did not get the nod. He chose Purdue. But I think part of the reason he may have chosen Purdue is because one Thomas Kithier took the scholarship at Michigan State. And Thomas Kithier was offered that scholarship at Michigan State to help secure the Foster lawyer commitment.
I was having at least an acceptable morning.
I want everyone to just lay in that mud right now.
Yeah, it's just horrible. I mean, you don't – and again, I've been – we've ripped on – no, I'll go in on Dane Fife, though, because this is ridiculous. This is his doing. And all he's done throughout the last few years is not develop the players that he insisted on recruiting. And now – and all he did before this year was tweet. And so I'm just wondering, buddy, like, what do you do here? Like, what's going on? Like, where? Show me your value. Where is it?
Uh-huh.
That's all I want. That's all I want. And then it's very possible, if not likely, that I clearly do not know everything that he does. I'm sure he's done great stuff. I'm sure he's helped recruit other players. There's no doubt in my mind. The fact of the matter is, we know why those guys are here. It wasn't Tom Izzo's dad coaching Clarkson. It was Dane Fife's. And so I just, I don't know, that those types of misses. And honestly, I do also think that it is worth, as to somewhat put a, I guess, positive spin on it. Like, it's not like Michigan State doesn't recruit these players, you know, somewhat consistently. It's not like they don't. Hold on, John, I got to pause 1 second. All right, sorry, I'm back. I marked down when the gap was. I'll edit it out. I forget where I was going with that. But anyways, it's not like Michigan State hasn't survived whiffing on recruits before. They've lost kids early. They didn't expect to lose. Guys haven't evolved in the way before. I mean, look, you can go really far back and talk like Marquise Gray. Remember him? Mm-hmm. He was a five-star. He didn't exactly pan out. So – it's, you know, it's not unprecedented that this has happened. I think, especially as you look ahead to 2022, which brings us to another point.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, we're not done. Okay. Well, go ahead. Let's keep going down this toilet bowl.
You mentioned, Cassius and Xavier made up for a lot of wards, but I would also say that, like, Xavier Tillman's sophomore to junior year jump was massive.
True.
So, like, sure, Michigan State has gone through this in many years of, like, you lose your stud, who's going to be the guy? Denzel Valentine came out of nowhere. Not mm-hmm. nowhere, but he took a massive leap. You know, Bryn Forbes took a massive leap. You see it all the time. Matt McQuaid took a massive leap. Kenny Goins took a massive leap. They stepped up. Here's the difference, Austin. One senior on this team, a guy who has, everyone will remind you on every broadcast, missed 2 years of basketball. He can't take them. Mm-hmm. There's your problem. There it is.
Well,
you're looking right at it.
I mean, I agree with that, but it's not like those guys were all going to be seniors when they took those leaps. Obviously, several of them were, to your point, McQuaid, Goins. But like Denzel, I believe, was going into his junior season when he took that big step forward. And it's not necessarily fair to expect it to own. I mean, you're absolutely right. To your point, 100% correct. But this is where it all ties back to. This team was counting on Rocket Watts to be that guy that took that step.
For a leap, right? To take a
100%. And honestly, I don't think there's anything that was wrong with that when people were all feeling that way. I certainly felt that way. I mean, the way he played in the second half of last year made it seem not only, you know, possible, but probable that he was going to be, you know, the engine that made this whole thing go. And instead, you know, it's just not even close to that. And again, I'll go to bat for him to a degree in that COVID didn't help. But at the same point in time, it's not like he's only gotten a little bit better. He's gotten so much worse to the point where I'm not convinced he's going to be on the team next year. And again, maybe that's just irresponsible of me throwing that out there. But to me, I don't know how he can look at the program, see the three guys that are coming in next year, and Jaden Akins, Pierre Brooks, and Max Christie, all three guys who need the ball, and all three guys that are naturally better playmakers than him. I don't know how he can look at that and after the year he's going through this year and feel like Michigan State is the place where he necessarily wants to be. Now, listen, if he gets a normal offseason under his belt, you know, he could become that player next year. And I hope if that happens, it's in green and white. But I don't know. Like, I think Rocket Watts needs a fresh start.
Well, you're right.
Somewhere else.
Here's the question you have to ask yourself. What role is are they going to ask him to play? And who's going to change first? Rocket Watts or Tom Izzo?
Right.
We all know the answer to that. So if Rocket Watts can't become what Tom Izzo wants, rightly or wrongly, it's not going to work. So that's my thought on him. And to your point about Fife and the assistant coaching staff, the Can't Read, Can't Write podcast tweeted something last night that I was like, damn, yep. If this was a football team, a coordinator would be fired.
Fact.
It's a good point. I don't care who it is. Someone's got to go. And I'm not saying that. It's not a football team. And I'm not advocating for someone to be fired. I'm just saying in the other revenue sport, if things are this bad, regardless of how long people have been there, that's just how it works. You know, so I'm not saying that's going to happen. I thought that was an interesting comment.
No, it's 100. I think that's 100% accurate. It's tougher to do on a basketball team, I think, just because there's fewer coaches to fire. But I don't disagree. And I got people to push back on me when I said that I think somebody would that a similar conversation would and should probably be had. And people are like, well, this team just won the Big Ten 3 years in a row. It's like, we don't do that. We're not doing that. This is Michigan State. If you want to be a big boy and you want to claim blue blood, and you want to say all these things that we all like to say, then you have to hold up. You have to hold the bag on the other side of that. And
well, you're right.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah. And we'll see, you know, everyone gets a grace year. Everyone, you know, D'Antonio got a grace year, you know, everything he did. Right. And then it didn't work again. And then that was it. Right. So, you know, you see what happens next year and then you reevaluate, right? And that's all you can do, because while this year isn't over, there have been a lot of broken teams that have figured it out. This team has nothing to figure out. They are what they are. This isn't a chemistry issue. They're just simply not as talented as the teams they're playing.
Well, so, it's a talent issue. It's a talent issue. It's a fit issue. It's a motivation issue. It's every issue you can have is rolled into one team. And I think the most disappointing part of this whole thing is just that, like, it's not even like you're patching up one hole and having another one and sprouting another leak. You know what I mean? You're not even patching up one hole. Like, they don't have the ability to patch anything. Like, nothing has changed. And that's the part to me. It's every night out. It's the same thing, dude, over Austin, and over.
I make the mistake of, like, recording the games, and sometimes, like, as you know, I found myself laying on the ground and this one, you know how that happens to me. Laying there staring at the ceiling, that one happened, and I'll pause the game because sometimes I need a breath. Like, I'll get so, like, upset. It's upset over stupid shit, dude. And it's like every, I would say 50, I'm not over exaggerating. I would say 50% of the offensive possessions, you could spend 5 minutes in a film session going through it's triage. I mean, it is insanity how many bad things happen. And you're like, I don't even know where to begin. To your point about plugging holes, this isn't like a, man, this team just needs to rebound and run. This team just needs, you know, to figure out how to do this, and it's going to help fill a lot of the gaps. Every possession is a new nightmare. And you're like, you don't even know where to begin. And that's where you've seen Tom stop yelling. He's not yelling. And that the old adage about, like, you know, if the coach stops yelling, it means, you know, it's not worth it. I'm not saying he's saying this team isn't worth it. It's just that type of energy, it doesn't work with this team. He knows his product is under par, and yelling at them, is it going to fix it? Because also, and here's the most damning thing, this is me, old man, yelling at Cloud. There are only two kids on this team that can handle that type of feedback that Tom usually provides, his coaching style. Aaron Henry and Malik Hall. The rest of this roster can't handle it. They become mentally broken when they are criticized like that. You see it with Joey Hauser. He threw the ball away with the second to last possession, down 5, the chance to cut it to 2 or 3 with a minute and a half left. Threw the ball out of bounds.
Yep.
Tom lays into him. The very next possession, he throws the ball away again. He can't handle it. You look, Rocket Watts. Last year, he had the longest leash of any freshman in MSU history. I mean, do you remember Miles Bridges getting just reamed as a freshman?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know why Rocket Watts didn't get reamed? Can't handle it. It's not type of coaching style. He can't handle getting that yelled like that. And that's okay. It's good for Tom to understand that. But that also means that they don't have the kind of OKG, our kind of guy, Michigan State staple, that has kind of made MSU grit and grind out every 50-50 ball, which MSU didn't get against Purdue. They don't create any of their own luck. It's because they're just, I hate to say it, they're not tough, dude. And that's old man of me, but like, they're not.
Well, and when that goes back to recruiting, you know, it's evaluation of some of these guys mentally. I think that mental level of toughness has always been a staple at Michigan State. And that's why when times get tough, they figure shit out. And you're just not seeing that from this group, which is concerning for a handful of reasons. I mean, it makes you question, you know, the guys that they're going at on the trail. And, you know, are we looking for the right things anymore? And again, we're probably extrapolating on the issue because at the end of the day, like, this team is a 3-time defending champion. Like, you know, we're probably making a bigger deal out of this than it needs to be for this exact, you know, situation. But it's just shocking to see it all coming together at the same time, night in, night out, and they're just not doing it. So I will be very interested to see what this roster looks like next year. I mean, you know, I just don't know. I mean, between guys that just don't have it mentally and then the guys that do have it, or excuse me, the guys that just don't have it physically have it mentally, mm-hmm. and then vice versa. So it's just, you have to wonder, like, what nets out here, and who's the voice? I mean, honestly, like, you look at next year's roster, who is that guy? Who's that leader? Who's that voice? Is it Joey Hauser? I don't think it's Joey Hauser. Is it Malik Hall? Is it, you know, Julius Marble? Who is it? No. Like, under the assumption, I mean, obviously you're losing Josh Langford. Aaron Henry, I think for all intents and purposes, should be probably counted as gone. Is it Foster Lawyer? I mean, is it AJ Hogard? Like, what's the deal? That's what concerns me about next year. I think talent and fit next year will solve a lot, and I mean a lot, if not all, of Michigan State's issues. I genuinely believe that with those three wings that they're bringing in. Mm-hmm. And that's not even talking about Imani Bates, who would single-handedly correct everything that's wrong. This team should see significant just improvement right off the bat. Again, assuming this coaching staff plays the right players in the right places, which apparently is now something we have to worry about. But I'm just interested to see, you know, if guys do end up transferring, leaving to go play professionally somewhere. I just wonder how it all ends up shaking out. It's going to be, for better or worse, I mean, I'm skipping ahead. I'm skipping ahead to the offseason. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Captains need to be, as we keep saying, MSU term, OKGs. Malik Hall's an OKG. Julius Marble's an OKG. That's about it. They are, in my opinion, the only candidates for captain. And Marble doesn't even get the minutes this year. So, you know, I that's for me, there's your leadership. That's who's going to, and because all the seniors you mentioned, I mean, Gabe Brown at least leads by example. You know, he goes and shoots after each game, which, you know, just good, nice.
Yeah, but it would be nice to see that translate to the actual games.
Yep, totally. But lead by example, that's fine. The core you're talking about, though, Akins, Christie, Brooks, those guys are dogs. And when they grow up, I think you're going to see Michigan State take the leap. One guy who won't be growing up with them, though, and I know you're pushing to get this because it's huge news. MSU loses a 2022, potentially 2021 commit this past week. You want to dive in?
Yeah, so that's Canadian center Enoch Boache. And to your point, John, he is a 2022 commit, but he has been very clear about his intentions to reclassify to 2021. So you're talking about a five-star, probable one-and-done center who at one point was committed to MSU and is now kind of a free agent. And one of the things he cited was it looks like Michigan State is going to have a lot of bigs coming back, and he wants to go somewhere where he can play and be the star of the show. I think it's a cop out because I think that he just probably misses. Let me just, you know, kind of break down what he said. On one side of it, I see what he's saying. Matty Sissoko, Julius Marble,
yeah,
Kithier, Hauser are all going to be on that roster. Potentially even Imani Bates. It would probably cut into, cut into his minutes to some degree. He's not wrong about there being a log jam, but that was true when he committed. The only guy that I think was probably going to leave that mix was, oh, and Bingham too. The only guy that was probably going to leave that mix was Joey Hauser. So I think that's a cop out. I think that's one of those things where he saw Imani Bates committed and he was like, oh, I want to play with Imani Bates and I'm willing to do this competition stuff. Now he sees, never mind, that Hauser guy's probably sticking around. Maybe some of these guys transfer, but still, it's not a clear-cut picture. So he bails and wants to go somewhere else. I can't blame him for it.
Makes sense.
I think you can't blame him for it at all. Like, he's an 18-year-old kid. I wish his team would have handled the messaging a little bit better and just been like, hey, it's, I just want to be the star somewhere. I guess he kind of did say that, but
he did.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting domino effect of Hauser not having the year that people expected him to have. And I don't know. I mean, if all it's very possible all of those guys are back, but I don't know if that'll be the case, but you can't really predict that right now. I think it's a big deal because it's a really big player and it comes at a time when, you know, things look as bad for Michigan State as they've ever looked under Tom Izzo, more or less. So from a PR perspective, it's scary. And I think for a lot of people, it's a scary, what people could envision being a domino for Imani Bates. Now there's nothing, literally nothing that Imani has said that anyone has done aside from, if you want to get into the Jaden Akins thing, that makes you think he's going to go anywhere else or do anything else. I mean, all the things we've talked about for months since the day he committed still stand true. That being said, I think that's what's really scaring people here. So it sucks. It's a five-star player. You never want to lose that type of player. But
here's the deal.
So
when he signed, didn't sign, when he committed, I don't know what the thought process was. Because there was, it's just math. There's 13 scholarships available.
Right.
there's no room. There's nothing that Michigan State can do to all of a sudden make room for a guy reclassifying for the 2021. As of next year, there are 15 scholarships on Michigan State's roster if Imani Bates were to reclassify. Let's pretend Aaron Henry goes pro. It's 14. Let's say Imani Bates didn't reclassify. Still 13. Still no room for him. So, like, I guess I never understood. Of course you're going to offer him and you say, we'll figure it out later. But there was never an opening. So I'm just like kind of scratching my head, like how, you know, it's February and he and his team are like, wait a minute. It's like, well, what did you think? You know, what was going to change? Was Marcus Bingham going to go pro? Where? Estonia? Like, right. That, like, yeah. It just wasn't going to happen. So I don't know what the thought process was. And, you know, we had talked about maybe Rocket Watts or Joey Hauser go pro. And sure, even if those things happen, as we mentioned, and Imani Bates, you know, comes in, it's confusing math. So I don't know what was communicated to him as far as like guaranteeing a spot. I don't know how it would have worked. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's all true. Yeah. So I think, you know, people want to make a big deal out of it, and it's understandably a big deal because he's probably going to go somewhere. I've read Texas Tech, Oklahoma State are all over him. Exactly the type of places he could go start and be a star, but
Oklahoma State, Cade Cunningham bag.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Who's there? Who's our dude, that billionaire? Oh, T Boone Pickens.
Oh, T Boone, baby.
R.I.P. That man left
it. T Boone left the bag. Don't worry. I'm sure he left plenty of baggable income for his squad.
Is one of the few people that chills at Ishbia's table.
Like, oh, yeah. Ishby is pulling up the little boy's chair to the T-Boone table. That's for sure. Ishby's got to name a full stadium after himself before he gets into T-Boone's stratosphere. All right, John, should we take a break and come back and talk some football?
Okay.
All right. And we're back. And we're a football school.
No.
We've got players breaking the law already.
Austin, wait.
A true football school.
Wait a sec. Someone asked the question, what school are we? Because we're not a basketball school this year. And my thought, you know, we might be a Matt Ishbia appreciation school until his investment starts to pay off in either of the programs he's invested.
That's fine with me. I'm on the all Ishbia program train.
Yeah, things you mentioned breaking the law. Jaden Reed got an owie, OWI, this past summer. Played in all 7 games. Listen, I don't
love it.
I don't know what happened.
Hey, this is one of those deals. We've talked about it time and time again. You want to sit at the big boy table, you're going to have to put your morals aside a time or two. And in this case, obviously, okay, before I go any further, there are things you should not put your morals aside for. We are very familiar with those at Michigan State. I don't want to mix anybody up here. Jaden Reed pleading not guilty to an owie this past summer, yet playing in all 7 games is just a nice dash of big time college football program this that's been brought to East Lansing.
Yeah, I believe in OWI it was reduced potentially because he blew under the legal limit but wasn't 21. So you know, take that for what it is.
It's not great.
It's not good. Okay.
Certainly not good.
So don't love that. Pretty clear. That sucks. I hope that in the future, at the very least, it comes out so that there can be public backlash to these decisions in the moment, not after. I don't know.
Whatever. You can get OWIs on bikes.
You can. I learned that while at Michigan State. Didn't get an owie of my own, but yeah, was informed as I tried to bike, and it's a lot harder than you think. Landed in some bushes and had to leave that bike behind. Never saw it again.
It's a real shame. Didn't mean to bring up such trauma.
No, it's okay. It's just you think you know, you ride a bike, you know how you're doing. I know how to do this.
Yeah,
it's well, a lot it's harder.
The old saying.
After you've had a few silver bullets, it comes a whole tap.
After you've tapped the Rockies, people tend to forget.
Riding don't a bike try this is a little at more home. Difficult.
So we don't like that. However, things I think we do like are that the transfer portal. Listen, it might not be bad. It's not basketball season. It's not football season yet, but it is transfer portal season, baby. And I am. So that whole part about Jaden Reed, that's the part of big boy football you don't like. The part of big boy football that I'm enjoying quite a bit is the transfer portal. Free agency, all for it. It's been a lot of fun. MSU landed maybe their most important, honestly, get in the transfer portal just last week in former four-star recruit Florida cornerback Chester Kimbrough. First note, awesome name.
Yep.
Awesome name. Maybe name, but he's in the running for the best name on the entire roster.
All name team.
Right off the bat, Chester Kimbrough. Fantastic. Second important note, he is not, I repeat, not the guy who threw his shoe and lost the game against Louisiana State. That's a big deal.
Very big deal. Although if he was, I think I'd like it too. So whatever.
True. I'd actually be more in.
Yeah, this guy, as you mentioned, played at Florida the past couple years. He had offers from Alabama, Georgia. I can stop right there because, LSU.
Yeah, all of the names you'd like to hear someone Texas. Get recruited, being recruited by, he was recruited by.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I think it's great, and I really love what this kind of symbolizes, and it's that MSU obviously wants to increase just the athleticism and general talent on the roster. First of all, they've already done a fantastic job of doing that through recruiting and through the portal. Kimbrough is a perfect example of the type of player that they want to go and get. And I think this was Colton Pouncey wrote about it in The Athletic. Two important revelations from his article. First is that they want to – the guys they're targeting in the portal now, obviously they'll go anywhere. I mean, Kendall Brooks is a D2 guy. They'll obviously go anywhere and get anybody. But really their main targets would be guys like Kimbrough who are at positions of need, SEC guys with that top-level talent that were at positions that were over-recruited. So guys that are transferring not because they're not talented, but I read in I believe it was in Colton's article that I think – it's not that Kimbrough, A, he played, and then B, there's like 11 former four-star defensive back recruits on Florida's roster. So it's not like he's pushed out by it's not like he got pushed out by nobodies. So I think that's big as well. And I think, just to stay on Kimbrough for a second before we talk about, you know, the other positions MSU might look to fill, you just got a starter at corner. I mean, there's at a position maybe that you needed more than any other, you just got a starter. So now with obviously still work to be done, but you start to feel a little bit better about the secondary when you see Kimbrough, Kalon Gervin, Michael Dowell, Xavier Henderson as kind of like the main names that are in there, obviously along with young guys like Darius Snow, Chuck Brantley, Angelo Gross, you know, some guys that you've seen things from already. It's at least becoming a little bit more comfortable. I think there's still some things that need to be done there. But to that point, turns out MSU still has 8 spots they can use to add bodies before this fall to last year's class. Because apparently you're able – it was a fascinating article. You guys should read it if you haven't. You can basically backdate recruits to previous classes in order to have more spots open up in your – current class, which is
pretty
why
sneaky, sis.
Real sneaky. I like it a lot. So Kimbrough is counting because of when he committed, is counting towards the fall class, whereas a lot of these other guys, Kenneth Walker, some of those other guys that have already, Jared Horst, are counting towards last year's class. So because they're counting towards point of the matter is there are 8 spots left that MSU can fill. That's a lot. Like, mm-hmm. that's a lot of potential additional talent that you can add to this roster. And if they actually do it, I think I read that like 35% to 40% of the roster will be completely new from last year, the beginning of last year to the beginning of this year. And that is like, you want to jumpstart a program. I mean, it would be tough to draw up a better blueprint than the one that Mel Tucker has executed on, especially, I mean, assuming he's able to execute on it, especially given COVID and everything. So super exciting. And I did sketch out some names and positions of players that I did a little tour into the transfer portal and found some interesting names that we might be able to add.
It's cool you went in the transfer portal. I've always been afraid to go in there. Don't know what to. I'm still just hesitant. It's nervous. I'm just like, you know, a little shy.
You're not ready.
I'm glad you went in. I think what I'm most interested in though is there's some pretty substantial upgrades needed at linebacker. Mm-hmm. Where do you think we stand in that area?
So I think when you look at the positions of need, you know, I think DB is still one, even with Kimbrough, but the number one to me, like you said, is absolutely linebacker. Noah Harvey and Chase Klein right now are the current starters. I think Klein's got some real potential. Harvey obviously leaves a lot to be desired, but neither of those guys are natural fits in that kind of 4-2-5 that MSU runs, with that one, you know, Michael Dowell probably coming down as kind of that jack or hybrid role. You need guys that can get sideline to sideline. And both of these dudes are probably more classic 4-3 linebackers. Klein even came down and played defensive end for several snaps last year. So, and the year before. So it's not that they're not talented guys. It's just that you need a different type of athlete to execute this system. Because going side to side, I think the example that I think of more than anything is when they played Iowa. And Iowa just ran that outside zone every single play. And uh-huh. Harvey was 3 steps behind every single play. So the names that I look at, I think we'll start with the most obvious one, and that's, Pelai Gaioteote. You'll probably recognize that last name unless I butchered it. His brother Ma'a was probably Michigan State's biggest recruit of this last cycle. 4-star flip from USC. His brother was a 5-star commit to USC who has entered the transfer portal. He's taken his time, which you can certainly appreciate. There are some other big names in the mix for him. I mean, I think he was a top 10 overall kid. So the fact that he's getting offers shouldn't surprise or concern anybody. But, you know, having his brother in East Lansing, kind of a big deal. You got to think it keeps Michigan State in the race. He would be plug-and-play starter, potentially right next to his brother from day one. Would be a massive get. Some other names to note, one of them is Ben Davis from Bama. I think anytime a player transfers from Bama, your antenna has to go up because you don't go there in the first place without being a pretty damn good player and a physical specimen. So Ben Davis was, I think, a top 5 recruit. His dad is the all-time leading tackler at Bama. Just never panned out for whatever reason. You know, again, this is kind of like Kimbrough where he's surrounded by 5-star talent. Yeah, he couldn't, you know, get to the playing group as consistently as he wanted to, but it's not because a bunch of bums beat him out. We're talking about guys that are consistently, I mean, I bet he's played with 10 NFL players at his own position group. So that would be, you got to think all the big boys are going to come calling for him, but if he wants opportunity in a guaranteed spot, MSU is the place to be. 3 other names that popped out at me. A really interesting one is Ben Van Sumeren. He's from Michigan. He's transferring from the University of Michigan and has a younger brother who just decommitted from the University of Michigan. He's already said that MSU is in his final 4, I think, with, I want to say, West Virginia, Arizona, and Indiana, I believe, were the other 3. Be the very rare, if only, that I can remember Michigan to Michigan State or vice versa transfer. But if he wants to stay in state and have a chance to get back at Michigan, Missouri, again, just kind of reading the tea leaves there, 2 really talented players, Peterson especially from Tennessee. He left because obviously there was the coaching change there and a lot of their best players left. So any of those five would make great additions. You know, obviously no real read on the likelihood. It's a chance though, because of the brother connection, but he's not, it's not the only position that MSU is going to need help at. I think the next one up to me would be defensive back. Three players I noted that I thought would make sense for Michigan State. First is Drayshon Miller. Actually, tremendous name. Again, tremendous name. He's been followed by all the MSU social accounts. He's a 6'2 corner from West Virginia. I think he would be just the one-year grad transfer, but would be an immediate impact. I'd be shocked if he wouldn't be a starter. He fits that physical profile that Mel Tucker and his staff love. So that would be a great one. Two other names that jumped out at me, another corner, Colin Samuel from Houston. Again, I think he was a 6'2", 6'3 guy. Not sure about his stats or anything like that, but just from a physical profile jumped out at me. And then Isaiah Robertson from Notre Dame, a guy who I think played somewhat, was at least in somewhat of a rotation at Notre Dame. He is obviously a guy regionally that MSU's surely familiar with, and plays a position of need. Again, I believe a grad transfer. I don't know how many multiple years these guys would have, but three names to keep an eye out there as well.
What else we got?
Two other position groups I highlighted would be, I'm going to do them in order of priority. I think the next one for me is wide receiver, which people might be a little surprised by, but it's just a really thin group right now, and there's plenty of talent. This one is not necessarily for a lack of having guys to throw the ball to. I think, you know, you only have nine current guys, but, you know, between Ricky White, Jalen Naylor, Jaden Reed, Keon Coleman, Terry Lockett, Trey Mosley, CJ Hayes. I mean, there's a lot of big time names in that group, but it wouldn't hurt to add one more, especially an actual big body, because of all of those names, you know, they're great. Again, I think they're going to be really talented players. You don't really have like a guy that's a 6'3", you know, kind of throw the ball up to dude. And there's two guys that have transferred in Warren Thompson from Florida State and D Anderson from Oklahoma State, guys from big programs. Again, really talented position groups at both of those schools. Both, I think, over 6'3". I think D Anderson's like 6'5", would just bring a different element, especially now that Trayvon Morgan has transferred. Another one to keep your eye on is Rashawn Williams from IU. He is transferring. He's from Detroit, former four-star recruit from Detroit Martin Luther King. Whenever guys are transferring and you're in the home state, you got to think there's an angle that you could play there if you're MSU. He's not the big type of receiver like Thompson or Anderson, but he is a guy that I think, you know, obviously would appeal to Michigan State if they wanted to use one of those spots for a receiver. And now if you're down to three or four spots, if MSU only had that, I would leave a receiver out. But just because I think if you have an opportunity to add a big time playmaker, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah. Rashawn Williams did have an MSU offer back when he was a recruit. So, which was, I think, 2020 actually. So yeah, certainly some of the staff, or at least the program, is familiar with.
Yeah, and he's probably going to feel that energy that's come from this new staff. And a lot of – it's a different group that's recruiting him now than was recruiting him then, if he was 2 years ago. You're getting recruited by kind of like a lame duck coach, and now you're at the beginning of something. So maybe a different message works for him. Last position group I wanted to note was the defensive line. Now, there is no shortage of bodies on Michigan State's defensive line. What they're short on is kind of explosion.
Yeah.
And I think there are four names out there that I thought were at least interesting and kind of fit the mold. The first is Isaac Townsend. He's a recruit who was committed to Oregon. Main reason I chose him as a guy to keep an eye on, 6'6". He's got the build. He's the prototype.
Mel Tucker is like, he sorts by height in the transfer portal. Oh,
that's what I did. So I would expect him to do something very similar. So that one jumped out at me for sure. Another one would be Trey Lawson, who is another big dude from Mississippi State. Again, no shame. You're an SEC school on a D-line. There's no chumps going to any of those schools at that position.
Mississippi State owes us not just a defensive lineman. They owe us an SEC Player of the Year.
Absolutely phenomenal point. Phenomenal point by you.
Yeah, we lost Montez Sweat to a really dumb because he was smoking marijuana, which if that happened today, among would us, John. Ugh, brutal. And then he become has he in how many pro bowls has he been in now?
Yeah, too many.
Cool.
So to your point, Trey Lawson would really get us back on even footing with the other MSU. He's 6'6", 240. Again, nothing wrong with adding that. Other guy to keep an eye on from an SEC program is Julius Coates. He's 6'6", 289 from Arkansas. I mean, again, if we're just looking at size prototype, over-recruited at a great position at a good school, these are the types of guys you want to keep an eye on. One defensive tackle to keep an eye on is Nelson Jenkins, again, out of LSU. Kind of same deal. Over-recruited at a great position. D-line at LSU. Yeah, I'll take your backups. That's fine. The last name to keep an eye on I thought was interesting is people might remember this name of Daron Irving Bay.
Yeah.
Former Michigan commit, transferred to Central Michigan, back in the portal for a second time. I know MSU was recruiting him very hard once upon a time. He's from the city of Detroit. And listen, if he wants to go do the full celebrate the state round trip, MSU would be the logical final landing place.
I think, Flint. And yeah, he was a U.S. Army All-American Bowl selection. Like this guy was a big time recruit, if I remember correctly, top 250. I do appreciate his commitment to the Mitten State if he were stayed at Michigan State.
Yeah, so lots of names out there. Definitely, you know, these are just the names that I picked kind of following and reading the tea leaves. I guarantee there are many, many more that MSU is actually looking into. But like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a name or two here that actually ends up at MSU. If I were going to put any type of odds on any of them, I would keep a very close eye on Gaute Ote and Sumerin at linebacker and Van Sumerin at linebacker and Drayshon Miller at corner. Those are the three that really jump out at me as there's legitimate interest from Michigan State. And you might be looking at three starters. I mean, I think that's probably the most exciting part as an MSU fan is that you're not just adding bodies here, which if they do, great. Nothing wrong with functional depth. You can never have too many good players. But you might not just get that. We could legitimately be talking about if these eight guys that they could go get, you could be talking about four or five starters. I mean, it's very, very possible. And I think depending on how the rest of the summer goes, you know, because we're sitting here in February, typically you know what that roster is going to look like, right? In the fall, you kind of get a vibe for like, all right, here's where I think we're going to be. I mean, MSU has the chance to add significant upside to their season if they're able to handle the rest of this summer the right way.
I mean, there's already a chance, Austin, that six of the 22, you know, positions will be filled by a transfer. I mean, between and it's not locked in, but all of these players will be competing for the first reps. Anthony Russo, definitely competing for it. Harold Joyner, definitely. Kenneth Walker, definitely. Jared Horst, definitely. Drew Jordan, why not? Chester Kimbrough, as we talked about, probably. Don't know about Kendall Brooks. But I just listed off with seven, eight. I think at least six of them are going to be competing for that first reps. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I don't think players are coming to Michigan State to not start now.
Exactly.
It's just that's the state of the program. I'm sure that's the message that they're hearing when MSU guys are calling them. I don't think that players are coming here to not play. I mean, you heard Chester Kimbrough say Michigan State's got a ton of opportunity. That's why I'm going there. He's very blunt about it. Jared Horst has said the same thing. I want to work with their offensive line coach, Kapilovich, and I can start from day one. I mean, that's why Anthony Russo's here. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's why these guys are coming to school here, because they want to play. And that's why I love their strategy. Go get guys that were clearly talented, are clearly talented players that were over-recruited, went somewhere in a big class, and not that they can't play, but they're just getting pushed back because there's these super talented guys. Nothing wrong with that. It's a great way to add a lot of talent to a program. And I think that, listen, if they can find a couple of line, if they can get one really good linebacker and one more really good defensive back, I think you start not getting, you know, Michigan State's not going to win the Big Ten. I'm not saying anything like that, but you start to think like, okay, they can actually be a pretty competitive program this fall. What that ends up with in terms of wins and losses is, you know, not going to say that today, but you put yourself in a really good position and you make yourself a very attractive destination for future transfers and for kids in these future recruiting classes.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. We know what we have. It's fun to not know what we have.
Because oh, yeah. Oh, this is the best time of year.
Yeah, exactly.
The offseason. I see what Michigan fans have been experiencing all this time. It's got to be great. All right, John, that's all I got. You got anything else?
No. Here's to me not laying on the floor anymore. Yeah. This basketball season.
Stay seated. Stay seated.
That's
we've
the
passed,
goal.
We've passed that point. It's all over but the crying. Just don't cry.
All right, man.
All right, guys. Well, thanks as always for sticking with us. For John, this has been Austin, and we will catch you next time.
See you.